ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
7 seconds to go. 6 seconds. Juzang in the paint. Fade away. No! Got his own rebound. Slithers to the rim and lays it in. 3 seconds to go. We're tied at 90. Here comes Suggs. Long three for the win. Banks at home!
March is a truly magical time of year when you think about it, right? The snow thaws, the clocks change, the days finally get longer, and it becomes socially acceptable to bet on a parade of colleges that you never attended and may have never even heard of. So today, ahead of the best long weekend on the sports calendar, we wake College Game Day's Chris Felica, the Bear, out of hibernation as fans return to the NCAA tournament after 2 years of waiting. And he helps us figure out how to cash in. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, March 16th. This is ESPN Daily. Chris Felica, why do I get the feeling that even as I sit here talking to you, you're also toggling between multiple sporting events on like a Minority Report style console with a very particular interest on every one of those lines?
Yeah, I know no bounds when it comes to my sports viewing, watching, and wagering.
No, I mean, look, you're kind of a maniac, Chris, and that's why we're having you on here. We kind of love it. You're a legend, to be clear, to all of us here. We watch you on College Game Day. We have for years. For those who are uninitiated, your nickname is The Bear. And so do I call you Chris? Do I call you Bear? How do we proceed from here?
Yeah, I'll say this. The only person that regularly calls me Chris or Christopher is my mother. So that's probably a giveaway. When my wife really wants my attention, like I'll hear her talking in the background and she'll be saying something. And if she really wants me, she'll yell, Bear. And that's when I know it's serious and I better move my attention onto her.
I mean, Bear, it does feel, you know, in your wife's defense that the NCAA tournament is always getting your attention when it's time, right? And it gets your money also. And I'm curious, like, out of all the things that you care about and you study so deeply, where does March Madness rank? Because you prepare for it in a way that just makes me want to cheat off of your homework, to be honest here. So what does this time of year signify to you?
Like, people always like say like the Masters kind of signifies the start of spring. For me, like, March Madness and the NCAA tournament signifies the start of spring, because growing up in the Northeast and being a Big East homer and just growing up on Big East basketball, like, March Madness and the NCAA tournament was everything. And as you get older and you have opportunities to go to Las Vegas to experience the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, it's something that's even bigger and better and more magnified than you ever could imagine. I always tell people when you go, just, you got to pace yourself, because you get there Thursday, you're wide-eyed, and it's like a 48 games and then in 4 days, and by Sunday morning, you're just kind of dragging, and you got to get that second win. So it's all about pacing yourself. Don't blow your bankroll on Thursday and Friday. Don't get too carried away and expend too much energy, because Sunday is usually when you get a couple of really great games in that late window when the afternoon of CBS has kind of figured out their schedule properly.
Yeah, like, I can't do Vegas for more than 48 hours, Bear, before it feels like I'm on an alien planet where the gravitational field is just crushing my internal organs. And part of that, I think, is just because I don't come naturally to the world of wagering. But you clearly do, or it seems like you do. And I'm wondering where you started your journey through sports to this point, to this mountaintop where all of this betting is part of your actual job. What did the bottom of the mountain look like?
Yeah, the bottom of the mountain, it goes way back to being a student assistant at the University of Miami Sports Information Department. And there were so many pro teams in the city, they used to hire out people to do visiting radio and TV statistics for the Heat and the Marlins and the Dolphins and whoever would come into town. I mean, I would work Miami Heat games regularly. And one night I was assigned to do radio statistics for Mike Breen and Walt Clyde Frazier. for WFAN radio. And being a New Yorker, Long Islander, I was going to obviously be going home for the summer in between my junior and senior year. And I just flat out asked Mike Breen about, hey, told him a story from Long Island. I want to get in the business. Any opportunities, but for internships or such at FAN, jobs over the summer. And you absolutely call me when we get back from the road trip. I'll set you up with the right people. He did, and I wound up getting an internship at FAN. And one of my superiors from FAN, a gentleman by the name of Bill Rodman, was one of the first producers at ESPN Radio. He heard I was looking for a job, and ESPN Radio was weekends only at the time. So I would literally drive up from Long Island on like Saturday morning and come home late Sunday night when ESPN Radio was off the air. But ultimately that turned into the ESPN College Game Day research position. So really it is totally turning into right place, right time. Word got out that, hey, you got this college football savant that's a tape op in your radio. You might want to look at him for the game day research position. And it's gotten bigger and better and more responsibility ever since.
So two quick things. Number one, I love that your career started with a guy whose catchphrase is also the name of an energy drink. Bang is exactly what Mike Breen is about. That is what all of us need when it comes March. The other aspect, though, that I love is, yeah, I mean, look, you use the word savant, and I allow that here because that feels appropriate. No, it really does, Chris. And I don't use that lightly, but you have been referred to in that way. Did you know that about yourself, that you would be the guy who had a mastery of all of these numbers that are ever more important to the business that we're in?
I had an inkling that this is the direction I wanted to go. I sent out a tweet a couple of years ago. I literally had gone from sitting in courtside on the Final Four working with Sean McDonough and Dick Vitale. After that game is over, I get on a private plane and go down to Augusta to work the Masters. I'm sitting there at Augusta, and I'm like, if I could like go back and tell like 14-year-old me that, oh yeah, in 25 years or whatever, 30 years, you're going to be sitting working the Final Four with Dick Vitale and then getting on a plane and sitting at Augusta working, like it's like a pinch yourself type deal. I was the stat geek as a young kid. I was keeping box scores and for Yankees games, and like is like 7-8 years old. I had my Scoremaster book out and keep stats for like a July Yankees game. So it's always been in my blood, the numbers. In high school, I didn't play basketball. I play football. I didn't play basketball, but I would be the statistician for basketball. So I always knew that this was something that I wanted to angle towards. And yeah, it's turned into something that really I never could have imagined.
Yeah. What were your fears as you were seeing a transition sort of in front of you materialize from behind the scenes stat nerd to co-host? I mean, what were your fears and worries about how this all might play out?
My biggest fear was I don't want to necessarily come across as an idiot. He hears the loud obnoxious Long Islander talking loud,
calling himself a savant.
What a dope he is. And like, I can remember Kirk Herbstreit and Lee Finning, who now runs the management for our football operations. They wanted to put me on air a couple of years even before I did. And I was always hesitant. And then finally one year, it was the first year game day went to 3 hours. And they basically said, look, you're going to have a regular segment. We're going to come to you whenever. They've got 3 hours. There are no more excuses.
You come to Hollywood, the A-listers are all circling around, hoping to have a spot on our set.
No.
We said, no, thank you.
No,
no, thank you. We have a plan here. The Bear.
The Bear. Love it.
Welcome, sir.
And we created a little niche with the board to pick some games.
Our buddy, the Bear, is here. He's got it up on the board already.
I think the dogs win, and I think the dogs win maybe more comfortably than people might think.
Now it's gotten more involved into getting into more of the topical conversations on the show, that more of an analyst-driven type stuff. That's ultimately what, look, I love the gambling part of it. I love the numbers part of it. But I also love being able to say, like, hey, he's not just a numbers guy. He knows the game. He can talk about a team's worthiness to be in the playoffs or why a team may struggle today. At first, I was worried about being perceived in a certain way, but people seem to have taken a liking to it. Being recognized in weird places is kind of a...
Bear, what's the weirdest place that you have been recognized?
The airport at Kruger National Park. My wife and I were on a safari a few days at Kruger.
South Africa.
Yeah, South Africa, yes, sorry. We were in the little airport, and literally there were four people in this gate area. It was my wife and myself and two and another male and female sitting across, and I'm sitting talking, looking at my wife, and I can see out of the corner of my eye. You get that sense like when you're kind of getting honed in on, and finally the female just goes, "Bear?" And of course I turn, and she's like, "I told you, I knew it was," and yelling at her. What I later find out is she was a Villanova grad and he was a USC grad. They lived in L.A. Villanova was the year Villanova had just won the national championship, and the show had been in L.A. a while. So we wound up literally just, "Hey, let's go grab a bite to eat." Literally wound up like sitting and having a drink while we're waiting for our flight. So it's weird. I mean, believe me, I don't mind it. If it wasn't for these people, we wouldn't have jobs and be as popular and out there like we are. So I love interacting with people. So if you see me out there, don't be afraid to come up and give me a hard time, even if it's about making a terrible pick. I won't mind talking with you.
Well, look, I love the mental image, right, of you're at Kruger, all the wildlife here, and the bear ends up being the most thrilling sight that they see, all of which, by the way, Bear, raises the question of your nickname. Just like, how did this nickname land on Chris Felica? How are you the bear? Why are you the bear?
Lee Corso, my friend. It was a year where we were out in Phoenix or Tempe for the Fiesta Bowl. And anybody who's been out with myself and Kirk know that any area on a table when you're eating, if there's nothing covering, no food covering a part of the table, that's dead space. And dead space is no good on a table. So Kirk and I are sitting in this lobby restaurant having brunch, and Lee Corso walks back in. And Lee doesn't have any qualms about like making a grand entrance and announcement. He like wants the attention. It's like, "Here I am," kind of deal. So he walks in and he sees Kirk and I, and "Yo, Chris Felica, Kirk Herbstreit, how you doing?" And he comes on over and he looks at Kirk, he looks at me, he looks at the table, he looks at me again, and just stares and says, "Look at you, Felica. You're just like a big bear. All you do is eat, sleep, and shit." And Kirk and I immediately lost it, and we're in tears laughing. And ever since then, I've been known as the bear, a nickname out of love from Lee Corso.
But I do have to push back on something, because the bear does not merely eat, sleep, and shit. The bear also gambles. So after the break, Bear, we're going to get you to help us be better at the thing that you do all the time.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Bear, I want to start here with just a nod towards the evolution of our business, right? Like, it wasn't common for people to speak so openly about betting. Odds and spreads and favorites and underdogs, this was verboten. This was like a Voldemort kind of thing in our business. But things have radically changed, quite obviously. So What's your approach as you talk about gambling for a broad audience that maybe isn't as obsessive and maniacal about all of this stuff as you?
Yeah, it's amazing because I can think back to probably even more recently than 10 years ago. Like I can remember when I was still in the ESPN stats and information department, and we would have to build graphics with Super Bowl odds or World Series odds. And like we weren't allowed to say like New York Jets. Like you couldn't put a Jets logo on something with odds. It had to be like NY-A. You couldn't say Patriots. You had to be New England. And to see now where you have the leagues have their arrangements with the gambling apps and the sports books, it's a pretty remarkable 180. But that is something what you brought up, something that I need to kind of catch myself with from time to time is I can't assume that everybody knows what big chalk means or money line. Like if it's daily wager, obviously you know that audience is locked in, they know. But if it's just a casual college game day viewer who might not be betting on a game, it's just a college football fan or a sports center viewer, you have to kind of, I don't want to say dumb it down, but you just have to be like, hey, the basics. Duke is a 17-point favorite over Cal State Fullerton, which means that they're expected to win by at least 17 points. And if you think they're going to win by more than 17, you're laying the points. And you kind of have to be a little bit more descriptive as to what that means. But that is something still from time to time when I get very passionate about something, I'll just kind of use the typical gambling vernacular because I'm so used to just talking in school to people that I expect will know what I'm talking about.
And to be clear, we here are the casuals. Like our audience, I consider them, and I say this lovingly about myself too, we are the dumb money. And it does seem like every week with sports betting now legal in 30 states and counting, that millions of Americans, millions of amateur gamblers also fit that description. And so if any of us are going to bet what is projected to be a total of over $3 billion on this year's tournament, Bear, I do need you to help us. So let's just start here with the basic difference between filling out your office pool bracket, as so many of us have done in the past, you know, picking winners in that traditional sense, versus the gambling that you do, like betting money on specific games.
It's a massive difference because in the bracket, you're just picking, like you said, who is going to win the game. But when you're betting games individually, one of the things that people should be aware of, you don't want to pay a premium for big name teams. I'll call it like the Duke tax. Michigan State as well. Duke, if you go back in recent years, they have not been a good team to cover. I mean, the Vegas odds makers know that they're going to get public players, first timers to Vegas, basketball fans who are going to come in and just bet Duke, bet Michigan State. But if you look at Duke, like since they won the title in 2015, they're just 4-9 ATS. Now, they've won a majority of those games on the court, but they haven't covered the spread, meaning that if you just pick them in your bracket, fine. But if you're betting money on them, odds are you're losing. And it's the same thing with Michigan State. They're typically a team that's favored, so you're laying points with them. And in their last eight games, the favorite, they've lost four of them outright. So, like, you're losing a significant amount of money on these teams. The big name teams, Izzo, Coach K, tons of Final Four. More often than not, those numbers are going to be jacked up a little bit. You're going to pay more of a premium price. So be a little bit careful when you see a big name team in some of these odds. And they aren't necessarily the best bets out there.
Yeah, and when you say ATS, of course, that means against the spread. And what you're advocating here is that Vegas has anticipated the enthusiasm and the name recognition. They've built that into the math. So I guess the big lesson here beneath the lesson you just gave us is don't think that there are edges here to really find. Like Vegas has gamed out this whole system in ways that you can never fully comprehend.
People in the gambling industry will say is the Duke name or the Michigan State name, it's baked into the line. That's what you, if you hear someone say that, that's basically what they mean. And you want to, like, you see all these big name teams in the first round, the one seeds, two seeds. Oh, they're going to roll. They'll win easily. I don't care. I'm going to lay 18, 19 points with Gonzaga over Georgia State. They'll win by at least 20 points, but it doesn't always work out that way. Like if you look over the last two tournaments, the top two seeds are just 6-10 against the spread. in the first round. So they've won all their games. They're 16-0, but they're just 6-10 against the spread, which means if you bet $100 on every single one of those games, you're down $500. So like that it just kind of goes to show, like, betting underdogs in this kind of role is a really good thing to do. And you said it too about the edges. There are no edges at this point. These are the sharpest, most spot-on lines of anything. They're highly scrutinized. They're teams that Vegas odds makers have been focused on all year. One of my number one rules, don't bet every game. The more games you bet, the more games you're going to lose, which is going to kind of reduce your bottom line. You probably don't want to bet more than 6 to 8 games, maybe tops, in the first round. Like, if you bet a quarter of them, that's probably around where you want to be. This is going to be an extremely interesting first round of the NCAA tournament.
What's going on this year?
You've got 11 games in the first round with a point spread of under 3 points, which means that there are a lot of close, high variance, like toss-up type winners in the first round. Like, if you go back the last two tournaments, there were a total of 10 combined. So a lot of these toss-up type games could go either way. Odds are you're not going to be on the right side of all these coin flips. If you've got a strong opinion or a strong feel, by all means, bet them. But expect this to be a pretty wild first round.
So another theme of your advice here that I'm gleaning, Bear, is that there is almost like a buffet logic to this. You're in Vegas. There's the all-you-can-eat buffet. Don't overdo it, right? Like, take your plate, put the things you love on it, 6 to 8 of those little dishes, but don't go for everything, because all you'll get there is literal and figurative indigestion.
Yeah, you can go pick up a couple of shrimp and some shrimp cocktail, a little salad on there. We'll go maybe take a couple of pieces of roast turkey. But after that, don't indulge in 18 desserts. That'll just make you throw up.
The favorite dynamic here, and just the ecosystem of Goliaths and Davids, Bear, I want to ask you about this, because I think we've established that the first round is a crazy opportunity to see all sorts of coin flips happen that will betray the branding of the seeds associated with the names. However, how do you think that proceeds as we get deeper into the tournament beyond this weekend?
It continues. In my column that's out on ESPN.com, if you go back last two tournaments, like the 47 games in the first round that didn't involve a 1 and 2, 1 and 2 seed, 21 underdogs won outright, which is like 45%. But it continues as we get deeper, not only first round, second round. If you go back last 7 years, the 28 Elite Eight games, the underdogs are 18-9-1 against the spread, which is ridiculous. And they've won 14 of them outright. So you do the money line on that, which basically means you just pick the underdog to win the game outright. And you've got a couple of underdogs in there, like Loyola of Chicago was a massive underdog when they made the final.
Sister Jean, yes.
Yeah. UCLA was a big underdog. Like there are double-digit seeds that are big underdogs that ultimately get there. So when we get along in the tournament, and two Saturdays and Sundays from now, when we have these Elite Eight games going on, remember, 7 years, underdogs have won 14 of them outright, are hitting 2 out of 3 against the spread. So all because we may see underdogs win all, you think it's going to kind of regress to the mean and average out. Doesn't necessarily work that way.
You know, I'm curious how much what we just saw in the conference tournaments shape your perspective on all of this, Bear, because we just saw, right, Baylor, Auburn, Illinois, these are would-be favorites, maybe favorites still, but they did not show up as people expected them to, maybe bet on them to in their conference tournaments. Does that weigh on you, the maybe like, okay, is there a little senioritis here, like the letdown effect? What does the conference tournament tell us about how March Madness may go?
It does and it doesn't. I think in the example of Auburn, Baylor, and Illinois, it's something that, yeah, it's a trend and maybe it's an anomaly or just a fluke or a coincidence, but we've never had a team which has lost its first conference tournament game go on and win the national championship. If you think about it, what it essentially means is if you're capable of losing to like an 8 seed in your conference tournament, you're capable of losing to anybody. People may snicker and roll their eyes like, it doesn't mean anything. The one thing which is interesting with conference tournaments is you can sometimes get a skewed view. The recency bias factors in our opinion of a team. I have been very high on Tennessee for a long time. And as someone who has been, I now am getting very concerned at the number of people getting on the Tennessee bandwagon after they just ripped through the SEC tournament. I've got some very nice numbers on Tennessee to win the national championship. So hopefully the weight of the bandwagon won't wear them down. And the same way with Iowa. Iowa was a team that didn't have very many quality wins at all throughout the year. Then they got hot in the Big Ten tournament, had a miraculous buzzer beater to beat Indiana.
You knew it would come down. This game has been tight throughout to a last shot. 5 to go. Bohannon, way outside, launches the shot.
And now people are picking this team to get to the Final Four. It's a tall ask for a team that has Kansas as the one seed in its region. And, by the way, has a team in Davidson in a 5-12 game who plays defense, who is physical, can slow the game down, which we'll see if Iowa can win that type of game. So I think especially in the case of Iowa and Tennessee, those are a couple of teams that people are going to be very, very high on now, whether it's right or whether it was wrong, as we move forward the next week or so.
So I know you want to police how many people are on these bandwagons that you're driving, Bear, but this is the part where I think we have to start cheating off of your homework, and I want to do that with you after the break.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Bear, yeah, I'm peeking over at your desk. I am whipping out my binoculars, and I'm trying to steal everything that you're putting down here. So, your Final Four, let's start with the Gonzaga aspect of it, because that's the team that Vegas favors, right? They are plus 300 at last check, I believe, which means for the layman that they have a 25% chance, 1 in 4 chance of winning the whole thing. How do you see Gonzaga at this point after a long time where they were clearly a David and now have rounded into being the sports Goliath?
I think Gonzaga, if they can get to the Elite Eight, they're in good shape. But Gonzaga did not get any favors in this draw. They could face a Memphis team in the second round, which has freaks on the team. We saw last year how much Baylor gave Gonzaga fits in that national title game. They struggled with Baylor's physicality, and Memphis is a team with physical freak athletes. Now, they don't necessarily always play up to their potential, but I would not be opposed to an upset pick of Memphis over Gonzaga in the second round. And then potentially, if they do get by to the Sweet 16, facing a UConn team, which plays really good defense, or an Arkansas team, which can go up and down the floor, athletic as all hell. Musselman is a great coach. But like Gonzaga's road to the Elite Eight is not an easy. It's probably, I would say, the most difficult of the one seeds to at least get to the Elite Eight.
But in terms of the bluest bloods here, I mean, Duke demands our inspection. Bear, what do you make of what they have gone through in the last 2 weeks, I guess? 2 weeks that have felt like a lifetime. I mean, they're a two seed. This is Coach K's final tournament. They start off against Cal State Fullerton. They have five projected first rounders headed to the NBA draft, supposedly, but they have lost now to Carolina at home. And, you know, they seem to be really disappointing everybody every time you look at them.
And they got blown out by Virginia Tech and Miami, and Syracuse had them in position where they potentially could have won too. Like, they'll blow out Cal State Fullerton because Cal State Fullerton's a team that was projected to the bottom of the Big West, and now Duke is just better than them. But I want no part of this team going forward. It's a team that doesn't play much defense. They're kind of one and done on the offensive side of the ball if they're not hitting threes. Like, I don't see this as a team that is getting past the Sweet 16. They were overseed. How they're a two seed and Tennessee is not a two seed is beyond me. You look at every metric out there, whether it's net, Ken Palm, wide one win, straight to schedule, not there's nothing that favors Duke. It's somehow Duke is a two and Tennessee is a three, which has got to be bewildering to me.
So if you are still, you're banging the drum for Tennessee, and I get it. And I'm curious then, like the converse of that would be, okay, so who is the most vulnerable, like one seed or two seed? Is it Duke? Is it a team that you've mentioned already? Who do you see as the one that you really want to steer away from here?
Well, Baylor is the one seed that I want no part of. Injuries all season long. I almost think Baylor is being seeded and treated kind of like 2021 Baylor. Like last year's team was unbelievable. I mean, ridiculously good. But this team is nowhere near as good as team last year. Like, and since Florida repeated 15 years ago, like no defending champion has even gotten past the Sweet 16.
Wow.
There's a trend there as well. And again, it probably is a little bit of an anomaly, but you think about it, it's usually teams that maybe have star players or senior later that win the national title, and Baylor doesn't have a majority of those players. But you've got a two seed in Kentucky. You've got a four seed in UCLA. In that region, who are, it's probably the strongest two and the strongest four, in my opinion. I think it's a tall ask for Baylor to get past the Sweet 16. I think either, if you could give me a bet of UCLA and Kentucky versus the field in that region, I would take Kentucky and UCLA.
Just selling the Baylor Bears, bear on bear crime is not what I expected from you, Bear.
Baylor's a team that's been good to me in the past, but I'm not feeling it with them this year. Too many injuries, and again, team that against Oklahoma in the loss, they were like 2 of 20 from 3-point range, and if they're not hitting their threes, they're all out of trouble.
So, keeping your rational mind at front of our analysis here, then give us a Cinderella, give us something that we can feel and look smart having picked in retrospect.
I think that Kansas has the weakest bracket, which means it's either Kansas or chaos. You've got a two seed in Auburn. They've been terrible away from home late. You've got a three seed in Wisconsin, who Davis is either still hurt or running on fumes. You've got a four seed in Providence, the luckiest team in the country. You've got a five seed in Iowa, who was a very chic, trendy pick to get to the Final Four. We all usually know how those pan out. Not very well. You've got a 6 seed at LSU who doesn't have a head coach. And like, does it mean like the Miami USC 7-10 winner potentially is someone you want to keep an eye on? Is Iowa State, it is an 11 seed, a really dangerous team? Colgate, a senior-laden team. If they beat Wisconsin, you get either Iowa State or LSU. If Kansas doesn't win that region, I think it's going to be either a 7 seed or lower who winds up getting to the Final Four.
So what is your Final Four then, Bear? At the very end here, what does the end of your bracket look like?
I will go Kansas because I do ultimately think they'll come out of that region in the Midwest. I'm going to stick with Tennessee because they have beaten Arizona already, and I think They defensively, they match up well with Arizona. And that Villanova loss earlier this year was kind of weird, fluky. So I do think they'll get a little bit of a revenge. I'm going to go with UCLA in the East, and I'm going to call my shot, and I'm going to go with Memphis.
Ooh,
in the other region, I have just flashbacks to Gonzaga against some of these teams in the past and some of the teams that they've lost to in the past. Watching them play a couple of times, they've been vulnerable. Maybe they can crank it up, but there's always one wild, unpredictable team in the Final Four. So why can't it be Memphis? So give me Memphis, Tennessee, Kansas, and UCLA at my Final Four. And boy, state of Tennessee would be all for that, right? Get the ball there. Yeah. And the Tigers both in there?
Yeah, I feel like your brand in Tennessee is burgeoning right now. But before you just go and run for local office in Tennessee, I do need you to help the casuals out here who are not going to be in Vegas, who won't be on some legal sports betting app, who are just going to be filling out their bracket in their office pool. As per usual, Bear, like, what do you got for them?
Yeah, in terms of brackets, like, if you want to win your bracket pool, that's, and the way I go about doing it, only once we have had four number one seeds reach the Final Four at 2008. It's not going to happen. Like, the numbers just bear it out. History bears it out. So, like, you need to take some chances. Like, I like taking two number one seeds at most to get to the Final Four. Just usually, if you have three, fine. But odds are there'll be a lot of other people in contention. But I've found it's usually two number one seeds and like a two or a three, and then kind of a little bit of a Cinderella. So that's kind of the formula I like to try every year. And then when you move advancing teams along, I like to just kind of like, if I don't think a team is going to get far, I will have them get knocked out a round earlier. So those are just kind of things that I think about.
Bear, as you continue to maintain your Minority Report console of everything happening involving sports and money, I thank you for your time. And yeah, go bet, eat, and sleep well. Thank you.
I certainly will.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.